safe. Our country has to be safe. You see what's going on in the world. Our country has to be saved.
A Davos surprise as President Trump considers expanding the U.S. travel ban list. It's Thursday, January 23rd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also ahead, the city of Wuhan now under quarantine due to a mystery virus. Trump's perilous journey for a second term. And the U.S. renews efforts to push Venezuela's Maduro from power. It's all ahead on today's VOA Asia. U.S. House Democrats are starting 3 days of arguments to make the case that President Donald Trump abused the presidency and tried to help himself politically and should be removed from office. Now, unlike yesterday, Democrats will have the floor all to themselves today for an extended period. Joining us to help understand just why is VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson. Catherine, thanks so much. You're a popular person around here lately.
Thanks.
Bring us up to date as to where the impeachment trial stands.
Absolutely. So we are in about hour 2 to 3 of what will be 24 hours of opening arguments on the part of House Democrats who are acting as impeachment managers. Really think of them as prosecutors of the case against Trump in the U.S. Senate. They've been laying out that case for U.S. senators who are acting as jurors. And I think what's really interesting to remember here is that, well, America and some of the reporters up on Capitol Hill may have heard this case laid out multiple times. U.S. senators actually may have not, because they were all doing their own work in the U.S. Senate. So the very first time they're hearing this case laid out, from beginning to end.
Is this like a grand jury where the senators can ask questions of the impeachment managers, or is it more like a, you know, kind of your standard petty jury where you just have to sit and be quiet and listen to the arguments?
Yeah. Well, after yesterday's marathon fight over rules and procedures, we know how this week is going to play out. So basically what will happen is that the House impeachment managers will present their case in 3 days. Senators have to sit completely still. They cannot ask questions. They cannot say anything. Then the president will present his side starting on Saturday. After that completes, then senators will have a chance to ask questions.
My understanding is that the day began with Senate Republicans. I don't know if they were giving in a little bit or not, but apparently the announcement that they weren't going to try to just move for an acquittal right away. Is that right?
Right. So what we have to remember here is that Mitch McConnell does not want to do an instant dismissal. That would not look good for some of his senators facing tough re-election races in the upcoming 2020 election. He wants to show that he is giving them a fair try, looking at the process fairly, also going to make sure that he is in complete control, and that if witnesses are called, it's going to be reciprocal. If the Democrats get to call Ambassador Bolton, then the Republicans will try to call Joe Biden in return.
Which might come first, the calling of witnesses and their testimony, or the actual vote on the two articles of impeachment?
Well, the calling the witnesses would have to come before the vote on articles of impeachment. But as we saw on that marathon site yesterday, calling witnesses is still not a sure thing. Mitch McConnell says that he is going to follow the precedent in the Clinton impeachment and wait until after the opening arguments and hold a vote to see if they even need to call witnesses.
You've been observing 2 days now. Can you just give us a sense as to, you know, what the feeling is like in that Senate chamber? I've been down there. I know what it's like during regular times, but this is not a regular time.
That's very right. It's a very unusual time. And I think that when we first had those ceremonial procedures, when the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court came in, swore all of those senators in to administer impartial justice, it was very somber. It was very serious. But, you know, we've had a couple of long days already, and senators are bored. They aren't allowed to ask questions. They aren't allowed to speak. They aren't allowed the use of their phones. So it's starting to get a little bit tedious for everyone involved here.
Well, guess what? We'll be talking again in the near future, I sense. VOA Congressional Correspondent Catherine Gibson, thank you so much for the time.
You're so welcome.
These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. Taiwan's president urges China to release all information about the outbreak of a new virus and work with Taiwan on curbing its spread. Bangladesh's government will set up a commission to investigate a sharp rise in the number of rapes after the country's top court ordered it to act. South Korea's military decides to discharge a soldier who recently undertook gender reassignment surgery. And President Trump met Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan in Davos and hailed the growing relationship between the United States and Pakistan. Read and watch more on VOA Asia Facebook and on Twitter, plus the voanews.com website. This is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard. Just hours ago, officials in Wuhan suspended all outgoing traffic from the city starting at 10 a.m. on Thursday. This came just hours after Chinese health authorities urged residents of the city of Wuhan to avoid crowds and public gatherings after warning that a new viral illness has infected more than 400 people and killed at least 17 and could spread further. The appeal came as the World Health Organization convened a special group of experts to advise whether the outbreak should be declared a global emergency. Cases have so far been found in China, Thailand, Japan, South Korea, Hong Kong, Macau, possibly Australia, and the United States. Gao Fu, head of the Chinese Center for Disease Control, said Wednesday that officials are working on the assumption that the outbreak resulted from human exposure to wild animals sold illegally at a market in Wuhan. Previous coronavirus outbreaks were also linked to animal sources. SARS transmitted from humans to humans from civets, that's a cat-like carnivore, while MERS jumped from camels. We'll learn more about the latest coronavirus, how it may have jumped from animals to humans, and how it could spread out further. Our Jason Patinkin spoke with Dr. Michael Osterholm, director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota in Minneapolis.
Well, first of all, the animal viruses of the world are constantly pinging humans almost all the time, particularly those that involve domesticated animals and or food source animals, wild animals that we hunt for food. In the process of handling the animals, handling their body fluids, slaughtering the animals, getting blood, other body fluids in contact with humans, means that every time that happens, it's just one more opportunity for a virus that may be naturally adapted to an animal species becoming more adapted to humans. In the case of coronavirus, that's clearly the case. We know that they can cross over to humans, and with sufficient exposure and ongoing genetic changes or mutations in the virus in the natural reservoir, the animal species they're in, occasionally the absolute worst combination occurs where a virus that can infect humans is in an animal that has human contact with that animal, and then you have the jump from animals to humans.
And now there's even reports that it seems like this disease can jump from human to human.
That's not jumping. Once a virus is adapted to humans, meaning that it now can infect humans, in this case with coronaviruses, that often also infers that it can also be transmitted by humans. And when you get the combination of the two, that is all the makings of a human-transmitted disease. So in some ways, the animal almost becomes irrelevant because now it's sustained by human-human transmission, and that's what we see here. Now, it is still important to understand what the reservoir is because in SARS, for example, we were able to get rid of all the palm civets in the market areas of Guangdong province, which in a sense shut off the faucet of new viruses entering into the human world. With MERS, we've not been able to do that because the natural reservoir are camels. With 14 million camels in the world, we're not going to suddenly exterminate all of them. And the virus continues to be transmitted within the camel population and occasionally spilling over into those who have close contact with it. This particular situation in Wuhan, we don't know what we have. Was this an isolated event where it jumped from animals to humans and then all of the transmission from here on out will be human to human? Or do we have a combination? Do we have ongoing pings from the animal world into humans, and that faucet's not shut off yet, as well as human-to-human transmission?
So what should governments be doing now to be reducing the risk of transmission and shutting this down?
So the animal reservoir, we need to understand much more about what the likely source was. We want to be very careful about just saying this all started at one market in Wuhan, the seafood market. But look at the animal species that may have been the source for the virus in the first instance, and make sure throughout all the food system of that area of China that that animal is no longer part of it. But I think that the more dynamic and really major concern shutdown that we need to deal with is that around human-to-human transmission. And we have seen with the outbreak of SARS in 2003, we've seen it with the MERS outbreaks that have occurred, particularly in, a good example in Asia is the MERS outbreak that occurred at Samsung Medical Center several years ago, where a single patient who came back from the Middle East was infected with the virus, was in the emergency room at Samsung on several occasions, and transmitted more than 80 people. And that was what we call a super spreader, someone who was highly infectious. The person themselves were not that severely ill. And that's the kind of concern we have to have today.
So far, it's been in China, in Hong Kong, and the U.S., you know, countries that have more or less developed healthcare systems. What are the risks if this spreads to countries with much less developed healthcare systems?
Well, first of all, I will be so bold to say it already has. Remember, anytime we pick up a case and we document that case, these are days after the exposure occurred. You know, on average, it takes about 7 days for someone to get clinically ill with a coronavirus infection following exposure. Then by the time they get sufficiently ill to actually go to see a healthcare provider, and then they actually have the right test methods to be able to use in that hospital or clinic or government laboratory, takes additional days. Just take a look at the United States. It took almost a week. We have to be mindful that we're always going to be looking at the rearview mirror when we talk about new cases in different countries. And I would, again, unfortunately, feel comfortable suggesting this has already been widespread through a number of countries in the world. 10 days from now, we can talk about what happened today. This is a much larger problem than the case numbers would give you today.
Dr. Michael Osterholm, director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota. In Hong Kong, where memories of the deadly SARS outbreak in 2003 remain very present, employees at Dragon Air, a Hong Kong airline, called for a halt to flights to Wuhan. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says that it has confirmed its first case of a new virus that appeared in Wuhan, China, last month. Health officials said the United States will be more strict about health screenings of airplane passengers arriving from Wuhan. San Francisco International Airport official Doug Yackel tells the AP that the Centers for Disease Control has a system in place to identify possible virus carriers.
Passengers that are coming from Wuhan on board are being distributed a questionnaire, and that questionnaire is then turned in to CDC staff upon arrival at the airport. Those passengers are being diverted into a separate area inside the customs facility where they're being interviewed and evaluated.
The patient who is not being named is in isolation at Providence Regional Medical Center in Everett, Washington. He has recently returned from Wuhan. Yackel says the CDC is collecting information from other travelers arriving from the region. Happening now in Asia, authorities in Pakistan detained a human rights defender for 7 hours at an airport as she tried to take a flight from Lahore to the United Kingdom. Activist and human rights lawyer Jalia Haidar was on her way to attend a workshop on feminism when officials told her she was on a no-fly list. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. And we're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. President Trump is on his way back from the annual World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. While there, he touted the success of the U.S. economy, but also warned that new tariffs on unspecified countries may be in the offing. Before departing, the president also made a surprise announcement of a new travel ban from visitors on an expanded list of nations.
No, we are. We're adding a couple of countries to it. We have to be safe. Our country has to be safe. You see what's going on in the world. Our country has to be safe. So we have a very strong travel ban, and we'll be adding a few countries to it.
Could you give us a hint about the region or the country?
Well, it's going to be announced very shortly.
While Trump did not elaborate, news media have reported that the preliminary plan would add 7 countries to the list. The Wall Street Journal newspaper reported the list now includes Belarus, Eritrea, Kyrgyzstan, Myanmar, Nigeria, Sudan, and Tanzania. The current travel ban includes Iran, Libya, Somalia, Syria, and Yemen, as well as Venezuela and North Korea. The countries on the proposed expansion list include allies that administration officials say fall short on certain security measures. And you're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news update from VOA Asia, the United States urged China to join trilateral nuclear arms talks with Moscow, calling Beijing's secrecy around growing stockpiles a serious threat to strategic stability. President Trump had discussed new accords and hoped to extend that to China, but China has so far refused to take part. This is VOA Asia. This news break from VOA Asia, a UN human rights panel has ruled for the first time that people fleeing the effects of climate change may be entitled to claim asylum, even as it dismissed an individual plaintiff's case against his deportation from New Zealand. Visit VOA Asia on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, President Donald Trump has already made history as only the 3rd U.S. president to be impeached by the House of Representatives. He now hopes to make history again by becoming the first impeached president to win re-election. But can he do it? VOA senior national correspondent Jim Malone has this look.
The President of the United States.
In the face of impeachment, Donald Trump likes to remind his core supporters about the election stakes in 2020.
We are returning power to you, the American people. With your help, your devotion, and your drive, we are going to keep on working. We are going to keep on fighting. And we are going to keep on winning, winning, winning.
Trump supporters like Nancy Fry need little convincing.
I think he's done right by the whole country. He's fighting for all of us every day. I don't know how he can even get anything done, but he does. So good for him and for us.
But in Washington, a more solemn constitutional process could have a big impact on Trump's reelection hopes.
You will do impartial justice according to the Constitution and laws, so help you God.
The Senate now sits in judgment of President Trump in an impeachment trial to hear the case brought by House Democrats, alleging that Trump improperly pressured Ukraine to help him in his reelection bid. Congressman Adam Schiff.
President Trump, by such conduct, has demonstrated that he will remain a threat to the Constitution if allowed to remain in office.
The trial has prompted hallway protests. And the stakes for Trump and the country are huge, says Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer.
The weight of history, the eyes of history, you feel it, are upon you.
Trump is widely expected to be acquitted by the Senate and remain in office.
A lot of presidents, some good, some not so good. But you got a good one now, even though they're trying to impeach the son of a bitch. Can you believe that?
But how the trial proceeds could affect the president's election chances, says analyst John Fortier.
Well, President Trump's numbers, approval numbers, have never been that good, but they've been in a narrow band. He has strong support from his Republican base, but has a hard time adding to that. So he's a little bit below where you'd expect a president to be if he were to win re-election.
Trump should benefit from a strong economy and his reputation as a tough campaigner, says Jim Kessler.
I wouldn't underestimate him. You know, he's always been an unpopular president. He was an unpopular candidate, but he's a very good counterpuncher.
I love champions.
Trump's impeachment will be a factor for many voters in November, says Hans Noel.
It's going to be about whether or not Trump was exonerated or whether or not the crimes and other misdeeds that are associated with him are actually bad enough that voters should vote him out.
Trump's fate in the Senate will be decided within weeks. A final judgment from U.S. voters will come in November. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Finally today, Venezuelan opposition leader Juan Guaido was in London this week as part of a surprise international trip to revive support for forcing the resignation of his nation's authoritarian leader, Nicolas Maduro. As VOA's Brian Padden reports, tough U.S. sanctions against Maduro have not succeeded in breaking the socialist president's hold on power.
British Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab Tuesday reaffirmed his country's recognition of Juan Guaido as interim president of Venezuela and called for new elections to be held in the country.
But above all, what we want to see is a peaceful, democratic transition, and I'm looking forward to talking with Juan about those plans and supporting him as best we can.
Guaido defied a travel ban imposed by Venezuela's authoritarian president Nicolas Maduro to visit allies abroad and attend the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. Guaido's first stop was in Colombia, where he met Monday with visiting U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo.
We have undertaken it precisely to find the tools to take action against the dictatorship, to support the struggle Venezuelans have had for years.
A year ago, the Trump administration imposed tough sanctions on Venezuela's oil industry with the expectation that its military leaders would quickly abandon support for Maduro and his socialist government. But Maduro has held on to power, supported by Russia and China. In a show of anti-American solidarity, Maduro's foreign minister, Jorge Arriza, met Tuesday with Iran's president, Hassan Rouhani. On Monday, Pompeo said Washington is considering increased measures to oust Maduro.
I've heard ideas, some people think that we underestimated Maduro. What's been underestimated is the desire for freedom that rests in the hearts of the Venezuelan people.
Maduro, who indicated he is open to direct talks with the U.S., dismissed Pompeo's tough talk as political posturing.
He is a phony who deceives himself, who lives from psychological warfare, who lives from falsehood, from lies.
Maduro has also accused Guaido of being an American puppet. There is concern the opposition leader could face arrest when he returns to Venezuela for violating Maduro's travel ban. Brian Padden, VOA News, Washington.
Finally today, we wanted to make a little bit of time at the end of our program for this story that seems a bit odd. The United Nations human rights investigators say that Saudi Arabia may have hacked the cell phone of Amazon boss and Washington Post owner Jeff Bezos in an attempt to impact the newspaper's news coverage of the Middle Eastern country. The investigators concluded in a report released Wednesday that an infected video sent from the WhatsApp account of Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman was sent to the billionaire's phone. Quote, the alleged hacking of Mr. Bezos' phone and those of others demands an immediate investigation by U.S. and other relevant authorities, said U.N. Special Rapporteur Agnes Callamard and David Kay. The experts said that enormous amounts of data from Mr. Bezos' phone was transmitted after infection. Well, that is our program for today. Thank you so much for being with us. We will be back with you again to round out the week tomorrow. We hope you'll join us then as well, and until then, be well.